I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Southern Peanut Growers, committed to making sustainable more attainable for chefs and cooking enthusiasts worldwide.
This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. I am your host, Katie Kiefer. And today I am chatting with one Andrew DeCoriolos from Farm Forward. He's been on the show before, and I'm going to ask him to tell you a little bit about himself and what he does for Farm Forward. And then guess what we're going to be talking about? We're going to be talking about, it's like sort of the natural extension of our last show, Andrew, because we talked about humane washing in the last episode. A couple months ago. And now we're going to be talking about Raised Without Antibiotics, the scandal that came and went very quickly without a lot of notice. But I noticed, and so did you. So, Andrew, take it away. Tell me about yourself and remind us of what Farm Forward is.
Thanks, Katie. It's great to be back. So my name is Andrew Coriolis. I'm the executive director of Farm Forward. We're a farmed animal protection organization focused on changing the way that we raise animals for food. And our goal is to promote conscientious food choices that reduce farmed animal suffering and support sustainable agriculture. Our work really runs the gamut, everything from work on state and federal policy to work with some of the largest food companies in the country to change the ways that they raise animals for food. And the issue we're talking about today, about antibiotics in meat, comes from an investigation that both Farm Forward conducted and published earlier this year, as well as you mentioned in the intro, this really damning science article published earlier this year.
It was published, right, and it was in April, and it was Lance Price and a few other notables. Lance, of course, has been in the forefront of sounding the alarm bells about antibiotic use in farm animals for, you know, probably a decade now. I've certainly been aware of him. He's at the, for people who want to know more about Lance Price and his work, Milken Institute of Public Health at George Washington University. And it was Science Magazine and a paper that Lance and his colleagues wrote that first, well, first you got my attention, Andrew, from Farm Forward. And then I, you know, started doing some research, and it turned out the Washington Post had also published a very large quite a comprehensive article around April 7th, I believe, if people want to go back and take a look at that. And the study that Lance and his colleagues produced identified beef cattle that were certified as raised without antibiotics, but which in fact tested positive for antibiotics. And this, of course, mirrors the study that your organization also did. So describe for us, you know, first of all, how did you get interested? How did you guys, why did you start investigating this in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question, Katie. So I think most of your listeners will know that antibiotics are routinely used on farms, and they're used for a variety of reasons. But in industrial farms, they're primarily used to compensate for typically unsanitary conditions that are creating animal health issues.
Right.
So, you know, if you're looking in the conventional meat industry, antibiotics and antimicrobials are, you know, really routinely used. Something like 70% of all antibiotics that are sold in the United States get fed to farmed animals. So it's That's an right. incredibly widespread problem. Our interest in it really came from our work trying to improve conditions for farmed animals, and certifications like Global Animal Partnership, which is used by Whole Foods. These programs that, supposedly or allegedly prohibit the use of antibiotics, as well as promote better farm practices. And we've been hearing for many years that there are issues with these systems, these programs that are supposed to verify the claims that are made on premium meat products. We've heard that, you know, there are bad actors in the system, people who are cheating, or there mm-hmm. are, you know, people who are perhaps sloppy and not checking carefully to see if their systems are working the way that they should be. And mm-hmm. we wanted to find out more. So we began buying meat products primarily from Whole Foods, but testing meat we were buying off of store shelves to find, see if we could find antibiotic residue in meat that's labeled as, you know, Global Animal Partnership or raised without antibiotics. And, you know, much to our surprise, we found both an antibiotic and other antimicrobials in these kinds of premium meats. And mm-hmm. we published that study earlier this year, which was then followed shortly after by this article published in Science Magazine that you referred to earlier. And this was a really large study of, you know, hundreds of animals over almost a year that found, you know, medically important antibiotics, drugs that, you know, you and I probably have taken in meat labeled as raised without antibiotics and animal welfare certified by Global Animal Partnership, both, you know, labels that should, if they're functioning correctly, you should never find drugs in these products.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they found drugs in something like 20% of the animals they tested.
Incredible. 20% is a lot too. I mean, granted, the sample size I think was around 700, maybe. I kind of remember that number. And I'm not sure how many tested positive, but it doesn't even matter. And I want to back up on 2 points here that you brought mm-hmm. up. First of all, you said that Global Animal Partnership is one of the ways that people can assume that the animal has been raised without antibiotics, along with a raft of other sort of animal welfare criteria. And your organization, and that's what we talked about, I just want to remind people of this, mm-hmm. your organization withdrew their support for GAP, Global Animal Partnership certifications, because you suspected that it was nowhere near as stringent as they were leading everyone to believe. So I think that's an important point for people to, you know, if you're interested in this issue, maybe go back and listen to Andrew's first episode with me, which was, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago. And you'll hear a lot about how these labels, you know, are deemed humane washing by Farm Forward and other organizations, no doubt. And then the second thing I want to bring up about this, just to sort of bring listeners up to speed, is that we're talking about what they found in multiple samples was tetracycline, which is something that we all take. These medically important drugs, as Andrew said, 70% of the antibiotics sold in the United States are going into the animal agriculture sector. And the loss of these drugs, which we take for granted, would have enormous worldwide global health implications. So I want to set the stage for why this is such a big deal. And the third thing I wanted to mention is that most animals, even if they're not raised without antibiotics, are supposed to go through a weaning process before they reach the kill floor that purges their body of antibiotics, even if they have been administered them. And the fact that these animals tested positive despite that very basic protocol makes it even doubly more damning in my mind. So anyway, with that, I will let you go on. Was the beef recalled, Andrew? Did the beef get recalled?
No. So none of the beef was recalled, unfortunately.
So it stayed in the system. Great.
Yeah, though the USDA has the power to recall meat that's mislabeled,
absolutely,
which this meat clearly was, there was no recall issued.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
And you said at the top something about 700 animals, and we're happy to talk about the specifics of the study. I think what's important to note is that the paper was looking at data from a very large slaughterhouse that, you know, during the period that they were testing, represented something like 12% of all raised without antibiotic cattle in the United States.
Wow.
So this wasn't a small test or an aberration. You know, while Farm Forward's testing, we sampled a small number of animals overall. This company, Food ID, that was ultimately doing the testing at the slaughterhouse and was one of the co-authors of the paper, you know, they tested 700 animals, but, you know, it represented a much larger percentage of the total U.S. Mm-hmm. raised without antibiotic cattle. But these drugs should never be in these products. We should never, and no one should have ever been able to find residues of antibiotics in any of these products, given what they're labeled as. And, you know, I think that that speaks to and raises this much larger question, which is who are verifying these kinds of claims on meat, whether it's raised without antibiotics or humanely raised, any of these sort of animal husbandry labels and claims, you know, who's verifying them, and does that verification work? And, you know, both our results and this article in Science, I think, you know, very clearly can lead the public to assume that they don't work in all cases. And we have serious reasons to be concerned that there are either bad actors or bad practices slipping through the system.
Now, just to be clear, who is responsible for offering the raised without antibiotics label? Just the producer, or is USDA or Food Safety and Inspection Service, you know, the part of the USDA that does inspect meat? Who is the one who is ultimately responsible for that label and for assuring compliance?
Yeah, so ultimately it is the USDA and the FSIS, Food Safety Inspection Service, as you suggested, is responsible for overseeing all the sort of laws governing labeling in meat and poultry and processed egg products. Mm-hmm. And for the RWA label in particular, you know, you would think that there would be a, you know, rigorous process by which the USDA would evaluate evidence from meat companies who want to use this claim. In reality, the USDA conducts a one-time review of meat companies' application. There's never an on-farm audit. There's no ongoing testing to ensure this claim is accurate. So basically, the meat companies are saying, hey, we'd like to use the claim raised without antibiotics, and you should take our word for it, and here's why you should take our word for it. And the USDA says, okay, sure, stamps it once, and that's the end of the day. That's it. So meat companies can use that label in perpetuity, without demonstrating, providing really any actual evidence that those claims are correct.
Wow. And with nobody who is, you know, coming to do inspections to assure that there is compliance with those with those specifications. I think that's the part that is really stunning, I have to say, that not only can you just file whatever paperwork you feel like, but there's nobody minding the store once you have. I mean, that really speaks volumes about the USDA, which, you know, let's remind people that this is an agency that, especially over the last 4 years, literally bled personnel. I mean, the meat industry has been lobbying for decades to get as many USDA inspectors out of the slaughterhouses through various programs that they claim will increase our food safety, but which have been demonstrated not to do so. I speak specifically of the one that's called HIMP. I can't remember what the acronym for that is, but it's the process where they're going to actually speed up the processing line, but they're going to have the inspectors focusing on microbial swabs at the end of the line rather than inspecting along the line for all of the many other reasons why animal carcasses can be rejected, including cancerous tumors, you know, disease. I mean, all manner of nastiness that goes on there. Mm-hmm. You know, so they don't have enough inspectors to start with. So it's, I guess we shouldn't be surprised that this happens, but at the same time, it is shocking.
This episode is proudly supported by Southern Peanut Growers, who are spreading the word about peanut sustainability. As the planet's resources are strained to meet the nutritional needs of its populations, many responsible chefs are doing their part by sourcing local and sustainably raised food. Many are surprised to learn that peanuts are one of the most sustainable plant-based proteins available. Southern Peanut Growers created the campaign Making Sustainable More Attainable in partnership with award-winning chef Steven Satterfield. Together, they're bringing the sustainability message to chefs nationwide. Whether it's conserving water, minimizing fertilizers, or achieving zero waste, peanuts are a logical choice for your next menu. Southern Peanut Growers represent farmers across Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, and Alabama. For more information, visit www.peanutbutterlovers.com.
I want to talk a little bit about the money aspect of this. How much more money is an animal worth if it is raised without antibiotics? Is there a percentage you could offer?
Yeah, it's significantly more. So it depends on the product and depends on the animal. But, you know, for example, you can look at a chicken product that's marketed as raised without antibiotics. They were on average $2.23 more per pound than conventional chicken products.
Wow.
So 55% markup on conventional products. So, you know, these labels command a significant premium, which is, you know, and when you understand that there's a lot of money to be made mm-hmm. selling meat that's raised without antibiotics or animal welfare certified, you can begin to understand how the incentives might be misaligned here. When you have, you know, government agencies like the USDA that are effectively asleep at the wheel. They are not regulating these claims meaningfully. And you have third-party certifications, you know, supposedly third-party certifications like Global Animal Partnership, which are, you know, providing the sort of veneer of independent verification, but in reality are, you know, auditing farms once every other year. You can see that, producers would have very strong incentives to, you know, use a growth-promoting antibiotic or use a drug when animals are sick and not remove them from the system as they're supposed to, because right. they command a huge premium for these products.
Yeah.
So without meaningful verification and with a significant premium, it should be no surprise that there's bad actors in the system.
Absolutely. I mean, really, it's like surprising that there's anybody who does it honestly.
Yep.
I wanted to ask you what percentage of American beef, or I guess we could even go just American meat, is sold with the RWA label? I mean, that's become more and more, obviously more and more lucrative, but it's also more mm-hmm. and more consumers are looking for mm-hmm. that label and are willing to pay that premium. Do you have any figures that relate to that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the potential market for RWA meat in general is big. A recent survey, consumer survey, found that something like 2/3 of consumers think that antibiotic-free labels are important. And something like, you know, the industry is one of the fastest growing sectors of the meat industry in general, mm-hmm. that's seeing double-digit annual growth. So the sort of like premium and natural meat market, which includes, you know, organic and raised without antibiotics and animal welfare certified, it's one of the fastest growing sectors of the meat market. It's still small, you know, it's still probably less than 10%, probably more like 5% of the national meat market. And you can imagine then that, you know, we and others have now found significant evidence of the use of drugs in, you know, these premium markets that are supposedly, you know, have checks and balances in place. And it's not hard to imagine then that the rest of the industry is much dirtier.
Right.
You know, if this is what's happening in the RWA market, what's happening in the conventional market is probably even more scary. So, you know, as part of our own testing, we sampled a pretty small number of conventional beef products. I just bought basically beef off shelves in San Francisco where I live, and mm-hmm. We were buying a brand called Certified Angus Beef, which is a well-known
American brand. I know those guys well. I know the people who run it. It's a pretty good outfit, really.
Yeah, I don't know anything about them sort of personally, but of the three meat products that we purchased, two of them tested positive for ractopamine, which is a right. beta agonist drug that's been banned in 180 countries.
That's right.
Over concerns about impacts to human health. So, you know, these drugs, whether they're antibiotics, antimicrobials, beta agonists, you know, basically drugs that improve the economic performance of animals raised in confinement operations, are widely, widely used. These are really a cornerstone of the conventional meat industry.
That's true. The ractopamine, I mean, that as you say, has been banned in over 180 countries. It's not just that we don't want it in our bodies, although it's similar to the drugs that are used to control asthma, for example. Beta agonists, it works somehow in the same way, but it's obviously not the same drug. But it contributes in terrible ways to very poor animal welfare outcomes. There have been documented cases. I'm just letting people know, because this was like a hobby horse of mine for quite a while. You know, the hoof, the fingernail part of an animal, of a cow's hoof, will fall off It causes them to, you know, have all sorts of mobility issues and gait issues. It does terrible things to pigs, where it is very widely used in the hog industry, not so much in the poultry. But that drug is not, you know, since it's not considered an antibiotic and it's illegal in the United States, I'm not in any way surprised that it is found in samples of conventionally raised beef or pork, for that matter. But it's still, I want to go back to something again about GAP. Like, so who is GAP? Who is Global Animal Partnership? Who set those standards? Yes. Who is minding that store? Who is in charge? Who's making money? I'm always looking for who's making the money. Do you have insight into that?
Sure. Yeah. So just for context, so Farm Forward was one of the founding board members of GAP.
Yeah.
We served on the board until 2019. And, you know, it was a program initially set up by Whole Foods. The idea was we would create these independent standards that, you know, meat companies who wanted to sell to Whole Foods would have to comply to. And it was an unusual structure in that it was set up with sort of equal representation from farmed animal protection organizations and meat industry executives, sort of creating this healthy tension and balance between, you know, the interests of folks like us who want farmed animals to be raised in high welfare conditions and farmers and ranchers who are trying to sell meat at a profit and are, you know, responsible for the day-to-day raising of animals. And so can give good insights in some cases on, you know, how what production practices work and which ones don't.
Right.
Unfortunately, over time, our perspective changed that we really felt that GAP was sort of no longer upholding its original vision to create, you know, incentives for farmers to continuously improve their practices over time. And we think that, you know, GAP now primarily serves to, you know, mislead and convince the public that the practices of the meat companies that it certifies are better than they really are. It's a certification, I think, that primarily benefits Whole Foods. GAP's executive director is a Whole Foods employee, and it's a certification that's primarily or almost exclusively used by Whole Foods. And, you know, the reality is when most Whole Foods shoppers, and this is sort of borne out by consumer survey work that we did last year, you know, most shoppers are looking for, when they're looking for animal welfare labels, they think it means that animals are raised on pasture. It means animals have access to the outdoors.
Right.
And, you know, in reality, most of the animals raised by meat companies selling to Whole Foods are modified factory farms. These are operations that are using, you know, complete confinement practices and are slightly better than the industry. You know, they're giving animals maybe a little more space, or they're giving them environmental enrichments, but they fall very short of what the public expects these labels and claims to mean. Mm-hmm. And Whole Foods knows this. And so the solution, instead of requiring better practices that actually meet their customers' expectations, they've made changes to the GAP label in such a way that it's making it harder and harder for Whole Foods shoppers to differentiate between the products that are just a little bit better than industry standards and the small number of products that, you know, are actually from animals raised entirely on pasture, which is what the public wants.
Right, right. And it's interesting because within that GAP certification, there are three grades, aren't there? Don't they have three, one, two, and three, like indicating levels?
Yeah, it actually has five levels,
five.
One through five, one being sort of, you know, slightly modified industrial practices, step five being, you know, very high welfare farms, animals raised entirely on pasture. Mm-hmm. In the past, you know, stores, Whole Foods, you know, sold a real mix of products. They would sell, you know, some step one products or two products that might be lower cost, but then they'd also have grass-fed, grass-finished products, and they'd have pasture poultry, and they'd have, you know, free-range or pasture pigs. And increasingly, that's not the case. They've really consolidated their supply chain, and now by volume, you know, the majority of the products they sell are from animals raised in confinement. And while they have this five-step program, and when you used to go into Whole Foods, you'd look at the label and you'd see the Gap label with a number by it. You'd see, okay, this was a Gap Step 1 product. And if you were a consumer, you could then make an informed choice about, okay, you know, I'm willing to pay more for the pasteurized product, or, you know, not today. I'm going to buy just the Gap Step 1 product. They've removed those numbers from the labels. Now it just says animal welfare certified. Mm-hmm. And there's very little or no information, identifying information on the products that would help a consumer tell the difference between, you know, an animal raised in confinement and an animal raised on pasture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's intentional, that lack of information, that opaqueness is intentional, because, you know, they know that their consumers expect more than they're getting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm thinking back to, like, when did I last see those labels? I don't have a Whole Foods right near me, so it's been quite a while since I shopped in one. But I'm guessing mm-hmm. that I would bet that change occurred around the time that Bezos acquired Whole Foods. Do you have any insight into that? Just curiosity.
Yeah. I'm not sure what impact the Amazon purchase has had on Whole Foods. I mean, it's clear that the trend has accelerated over the last few years, that they've really consolidated their supply chains. Mm-hmm. That pressure may have come from, you know, Amazon,
yep.
And them adopting, more quote unquote streamlined,
supply chain practices.
Yeah. But it's been pretty well documented that, you know, Whole Foods changes towards, getting rid of or firing many of their, like, local forager positions, or no longer buying as many products from, you know, local or regional producers. That trend has been underway for quite a while and has been well documented. I mean, mm-hmm. it's been not even an open secret. It's just been an openly reported fact about Whole Foods over the last, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, because I remember when we first started the radio station, we had a regular guest on who was a local forager for Whole Foods, a marvelous young woman, mm-hmm. Really delightful, yeah. And was, you know, filled with enthusiasm and you know, loyalty towards the thing. I don't know if she still works there. We're going back 12 years, but it was notable. I mean, that, you know, grocery store chains didn't do that. They weren't buying local stuff from anybody. It is very interesting that all of that, you know, language has gone away from their style of advertising and branding. Very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Andrew, I want to talk for like 2 seconds about why do people like us bang on about antibiotic overuse in livestock? I want people to understand just how serious this problem is. So can you explain a little bit about what that means in terms of global or public health in general?
Sure. I'll do a pretty hackneyed job of it not being a public health
scientist, but there are some startling facts and figures that I'm sure you
know.
Happy to do it.
So, you know, the basic point is that, you know, using routinely antibiotics on farms makes them less effective for human use. And this has been something that, you know, antibiotic advocates have been warning about for 60 years. This is something new. We know that the overuse of antibiotics makes them less effective for human use over time. And the situation at this point is now really a crisis. Recent research data from 2019, though the study was just published this year, found that almost 5 million people died from illnesses where antibiotic-resistant bacteria played a part.
Mm-hmm.
Basically drug-resistant infections, just for scale, you know, are killing more people than HIV and AIDS or malaria by, you know, fivefold.
Wow.
And, you know, global public health agencies are warning that, you know, they're predicting that by 2050, something like 10 million people could die every year from antibiotic resistant infections. This is what people talk about when they say, you know, the end of the antibiotic era. It means that, you know, previously routine infections or surgeries could be fatal. It means that, you know, illnesses that you can get in a hospital that used to be treated with a course of antibiotics are now resistant to, you know, all courses of antibiotics and are leading to, early mortality. People dying when they, 10, 20, 30 years ago wouldn't have.
Right.
And sort of on top of that, you've got fewer and fewer new antibiotics being developed. And there's a host of reasons that Dr. Price could better speak to about why that is. But the end result is that you've got, farmers and ranchers using huge volumes of antibiotics to compensate for, effectively bad conditions. Mm-hmm. And those drugs becoming less effective for human use and the public suffering because of it. So, right. When we talk about, we've got, cheap meat, isn't cheap meat great? The answer is, it's only cheap if we're not paying for all of the other things that it then contributes to, things like environmental pollution or the spread of antibiotic resistant bacteria.
Yeah, I mean, just the cost of illness from antibiotic resistant bacteria should be enough. The loss of productivity, the loss of economic activity and so on from people who are hospitalized for what used to be, nothing. I mean, when you go into the hospital for a procedure now, you're swabbed for MRSA, methicillin resistant staph aureus, which is a killer. And they don't really have a cure for that. And yet, like I was in the hospital last year, I got swabbed. By golly, I had it. I had MRSA in my nose. And that goes, one of those zoonotic diseases that goes back and forth between animals and humans. It's really the here is now. It's mm-hmm. here and it's now, right?
Yeah.
So it's not something that we can just pretend is going to go away because I don't know what. And of course, the legislators, the FDA tried to regulate some of these drugs. During the Obama administration around 2011 or 12, they came out with guidances about, no more growth promotant, but of course, you're still going to use a subtherapeutic dose to, maintain prophylactically their health. I mean, all these mm-hmm. loopholes within these guidelines, which have resulted in fact, an uptick in antibiotic use over the last couple of years, if I'm not mistaken. I did a show recently about it.
That's right. Yeah, there had been, when those rules went into place in the Obama administration, Rule 217, it was called.
Right.
There was some positive positive voluntary movement.
Right.
But over the last 3 to 4 years, that, those positive trends have now been reversed.
That's right.
In the last couple of years, we've seen an increase in the volume of antibiotics used. Yeah. I mean, you talked about the cost, for human health, and it's scary that you had, MRSA in your nose. But, the cost, as you said, nationally for us is something like $55 billion a year. We're talking about huge sums of money
yeah.
that it costs us just to have these drugs being over and misused on animal farms.
Right, right. And by the way, it has an impact on animal health as well, because then they're not effective for the animals either. So the animals are suffering more than they might necessarily need to. I mean, that's just another little byproduct of this. And then, of course, there's the fact that it's being excreted and, either going into our streams and waterways or onto our land for manure, for fertilizer, or it's being airborne in particulate matter. I mean, I interviewed a professor from Brown University earlier this year who had done a study on Narragansett Bay. I live in Rhode Island. And they had samples of antibiotic resistant bacteria through DNA testing, or genetic sequencing, they could identify where it came from. It came from farms in the Midwest. It's coming in the airstream and dropping through the rain into our bodies of water and onto our land. I mean, it's absolutely unconscionable that nothing is, we cannot, it's like gun control. We can't seem to move the needle on this. It's really amazing. So let's, in the remaining few minutes that we have, let's talk about the kind of policy reform that we would need to take place that would, give the public the sense that there is somebody, in fact, in charge here who has public health in mind rather than profit, because, profit over people,
yep.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the very least, the USDA needs to require that any animal any animal raising claim, whether it's humanely raised or raised without antibiotics, they need to prove with ongoing evidence that those claims are accurate. One of the companies that was doing this testing, Food ID, they developed a low cost real time testing technology for live animals that meat companies can use today. They can, you know, they, and there are other companies like this, you know, there, this isn't an exclusive technology. There are products now in the market that make this kind of testing available to producers. And the USDA should require it, simple as that. Right. If you're going to make these claims, you should prove that they're accurate. That should be the very lowest bar.
Right.
And until they do, you know, retailers like Whole Foods should be requiring that the meat companies test as well. If you're a retailer or a restaurant company and you're marketing and making profit from meat, you know, boldly claimed to be raised without antibiotics or no antibiotics ever, prove it. You should be required to, and you should require of your suppliers that they produce evidence to demonstrate that those claims are accurate. And it's the very least that your customers should expect, that you can provide that kind of data to the public transparently.
That's right.
There are already meat companies who are selling, you know, raised without antibiotics, meat products, and they're putting information on their packaging that lets consumers scan a code and go to a website and get an independent report to demonstrate that that meat product was tested and came back clean for antibiotic residues. That should be the bar for all products. It's like we should be able to, you know, in an age of technology and sort of like, you know, consumer action, we should be able to get this information about products.
Yes.
And retailers should require it. So, you know, the fact that Whole Foods, you know, says all their meat is always antibiotic free, but doesn't do anything to verify that that claim is correct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to demand better of them and other companies who are making these
claims.
Yeah,
absolutely. Especially with the profit margin that they're making on it. I mean, it really is. It's unconscionable. It's food fraud, which, you know, is a multi-billion dollar, you know, in the tens of billions of dollars worth of industry as it is, you know, but you don't, I mean, food fraud, you know, you think it's like fish that's mislabeled or it's olive oil that's not where it's from, or it's honey that isn't what it is, you know, but you don't think that it's your own very own meat supply, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it suggests to
absolutely.
Me that they're buying meat from other countries, say Brazil, JBS, you know, people like actors like that. Who have no such requirements, and their, you know, their cattle producers are pumping their animals absolutely full of this stuff, because of the conditions that they're living in. So, you know, that is one of the reasons why there's a segment of the beef industry now, for instance, that's begging for country of origin labeling to come back, which was, you know, crushed by the World Trade Organization, you know, and pressure from within and without. So, you know, if we could identify exactly where our meat is coming from, we'd probably be able to have a better handle on the supply chain and the ability to test it before it gets to a consumer who's paid premium dollar for it, right?
Yeah, though having said that, you know, both the testing that we did and the science article, these were all cattle raised and killed in the United States.
Right?
So, like, yeah, it may be that there are, that, you know, that international producers, you know, that regulating international producers for antibiotics is, you know, even more challenging than producers in the U.S. That may be true, but it's not like U.S. producers are necessarily better by virtue of being in the U.S. The profit margins and profit motive remains the same for U.S.
of
producers.
Course.
So I think we need to test all of them, you know, and it's not like you need to test every animal, but you need to test a statistically significant portion of
sure.
them. And, you know, we tested a small portion, Food ID tested a small portion. We shouldn't have been able to find products with antibiotics
right.
in them. And, you know, and companies who are making these claims can easily afford to, to test 10% or something of the products that they're selling to make sure that the claims they're making are
well,
true.
And if you think about it from the economic standpoint, if you can make that claim on your label and give the QR code, as you just described, some companies is doing already. I mean, I would be a consumer who would check that out. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that would encourage me to buy that brand on a regular basis. I mean, it seems like a very basic and marketing idea.
I think that's exactly right. And if there is sort of hope for change, you know, obviously we have to demand that the USDA do better. We know that the USDA is a fairly captured industry and that the meat industry likes the status quo as it
yes.
is. So forcing change at the USDA is going to be incredibly difficult, though, of course, we have to try. You know, but in the meantime, you know, consumers can look out for brands that are, whether it's a meat brand or whether it's a retailer or another kind of, you know, restaurant or food company, who are not just making marketing claims, but who are demonstrating with proof, who are saying, yeah, you know, I sell raised without antibiotics meat, and here's the evidence for
right.
it. And that, you know, if consumers become more skeptical if we say, you know, and consumers, I think, already know that these claims, by and large, are not trustworthy. And so we just need to take that next step, which is we need to opt out of those products that are, you know, not meeting our standards for transparency and trust, right, and reward those who are. And that's, I think, then when some of this sort of like voluntary cleanup might happen.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. But that's the bottom line is that consumers cannot rely upon government agencies or, you know, supposedly squeaky clean retailers. Mm-hmm. And really, you have to be your own advocate in this, as in everything else. We're going to have to wrap it up here, but I want people to learn more about Farm Forward. Andrew, so give yourself a plug and tell people how they can learn more about your organization.
Thank you. Yeah, folks can find us on the web at farmforward.com. We've got a banner right now up on the homepage that can help us demand better of retailers like Whole Foods. We're asking Whole Foods to implement this kind of verification for all of their meat supply chain. Mm-hmm. Thousands of people have already signed up on that petition to help us put pressure on them and others. And we hope you'll join us.
Thank you so much. It's been a great conversation, Andrew. I look forward to our next opportunity. I really, truly do. Always
Thanks.
A good time.
Always appreciate it.
Thanks so much for tuning in, folks. Thanks so much to my sponsor, for whom I did not make a break, but I know Armin will for me. Batting 1,000 today, kids. So long for now. And we'll pick it up next week with another interesting dive into the food system. Stay tuned for that. So long for now.
What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights, is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.